Hello, this is the Torg Eternity Delphi Council debriefings where the storm has a name. We are your hosts, Lehman, Jay, and Mark, and today we will be going further into the cyberpapacy COSM cards. So last episode we did cards 1 through 10, and today we are doing cards 11 through 20. But before we dive into the cards, we do wish to remind you that if you wish, and we encourage it, you can write us at torgdcd@gmail.com. And we will read your emails, we will answer your questions, if you have comments, we might comment back, but we do always enjoy reading those. So that, again, is torgdcd@gmail.com. So let's go ahead and dive really fast through this first COSM card of 11, which is Wanted. Wanted, I'll just read it again because it was in last episode. Play after committing a crime against the Cyber Church, including battle against church forces. The church police send a strike team to attack someone this act. All Storm Knights involved gain 1 to 3 possibilities after the strike team is repulsed, depending on the strength of the strike team. So I'd just like to have you go back one episode and listen for it was...
Card 8.
So card 8 in last episode is the same as card 11 in this episode. So moving on, card number...
This one has better art, though.
Yeah.
More fitting in my
opinion. I don't know. I kind of like the art.
I like the Cygoyle art, but I think for being wanted, this one fits better.
Fair.
Card number 12, The One True Way. Play this card on any character who can invoke non-cyberpapacy miracles. That character's invocations are disfavored for the rest of the scene. If she is a Storm Knight, she gains 2 possibilities. So, Jay, what are your thoughts on The One True Way?
Well, this is one of those deals where... you don't get to redraw, but it's really only targeting very specific types of people. So if you have a character who's a miracle worker, but not a cyberpapacy miracle worker, then it can affect you. So the odds of that are... fair, not super slim, but not it's not necessarily good. There's usually a miracle worker of some kind. A lot of people like to have a healer. And cyberpapacy, at least in my game, a full half of the miracle workers have been cyberpapacy miracle workers, I think. But I think that's just my players. I know Adinos are quite popular as well. Even like Isle Light, Clerics of Dunad. So it is possible. But the thing is, the odds of encountering non-cyberpapacy miracle working NPCs is very slim, and most of those are actually on your side. So you don't really want to cast this. This might be good if you're in like a mixed zone, like in the channel, and there's Isle-ish clerics. This would work against them, but if you do this on one of your own party members, they at least get 2 possibilities. But being disfavored means you can't use those possibilities, or you have to waste one of those possibilities, basically. So I like the theme, the idea behind this card. I just don't really like the way it kind of works out all that well.
Mark, your thoughts on The One True Way?
Oh, this is a horrible card. It's a horrible card because when you play it on your... as Jay pointed out, it's generally speaking, it's only going to work on somebody on your side. If you're in the cyberpapacy and you're facing cyberpapal characters, generally speaking, they're going to be casting cyberpapal miracles, and this doesn't work on them. So you've narrowed the targets that you can use it on down to people that are on your side. And if you put this on one of your friends, then disfavored is around for the entire scene. And this is not like normal disfavored, where if someone puts that condition on me or on my Storm Knight when I get my first explosion, it goes away. Boom. And now I can spend possibilities, hero cards, and whatever. Normally, this is, you're disfavored. Period. So even if you were like, I spend a possibility, and then I can spend a hero, and then I can spend a drama. If you really needed to pull it out of the hat, you could, but with this, you're still disfavored. You're still disfavored. You're still disfavored. I might adjudicate this where if it gets played on a Storm Knight and the Storm Knight casts a miracle that's non-Cyber Papacy and is disfavored and spends a possibility, that disfavored is gone for that casting. And so then could play heroes and dramas on that casting. And then for the next casting, the disfavored pops back up because that's what this does, in my opinion. And so they just it's just really bad. I mean, it's two possibilities is not enough if you're going to actually play this on somebody. But as Jay pointed out, it doesn't say that if you don't have miracle, you're holding, if you don't have miracle workers, if you don't have someone who casts miracles in your party and you draw this card, you're stuck with it.
Yeah, I would say that my understanding would be that it's just per each individual test, it would be the first explosion or add a D20 that would be canceled. But still, and I understand why it's not. I think this card would be a much more useful and fun card if it would affect any miracle worker. Being that it's the one true way, I absolutely understand why it won't affect Cyber Papacy miracles, but that really does limit the card. So I just think Jay said it, great theme, bad execution.
It might almost be better if you made it miracles used against the Cyber Papacy, because then it could be any miracles cast against Cyber Papacy forces, at which point you've got the GM adjudicating that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it doesn't matter what the miracle is. That would make it a little better.
Let's move on to card number 13, the Law of Ordeal. Play this card on a Storm Knight when opposed by a Cyber Priest, Cyber Nun, or Inquisitor. Attacks on the Storm Knight are favored for the scene. At the end of the scene, he gains 3 possibilities. So, Jay, your thoughts on Law of Ordeal?
I might just change that to be like member of the Cyber Church.
Mm-hmm. I was going to bring that
because,
up.
Yeah. Because, you know, bishops, they can't do anything to you.
Cygoyles.
Yeah. I don't know if I would give it to a... Yeah. I don't know if I would give it to like a Cygoyle or a Cartagres or stuff like that, but it would have to be like someone with faith, you know? Like, I don't even know if I would give like an inspector or church police it, but...
Somebody with miracles.
It's a risk, but you have to be fighting someone who, like, could possibly take you out. Right? Mm. Like you, and when it says opposed, it doesn't, I guess, have to be in combat, but it does specifically say attacks. Doesn't say interaction attacks or tests in general. So I would really only let them play this if it was combat. And if it wasn't obvious that they were just going to smoke the person next turn, right? Like, I would probably require them to play this at the beginning of the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they don't play it right away, then they don't play it. And it does last for the whole scene, so even if combat breaks off and something else happens, it'll still be up. So, favorite on attacks is pretty good. And then at the end of the scene, 3 possibilities is a lot to get for it. So, it depends on who plays this. If it's the tank character who's going to be attacked anyways. Mm. But it is the person who is targeted, not the player of the card. So, that is something to keep in mind as well. So, if you're like the weedy strength 6 guy with no armor, and you want those possibilities, you do have to risk it. And I would say, of course, it is an ordeal. So if someone has this played on them as the GM, make it an ordeal. Like, they should be targeted and not just ignored. But also don't play the enemies as stupid and just gun for them and, you know, fall into traps or anything like that. Yeah, so it is potentially too powerful for the players, but you just got to kind of watch how it goes.
Mark, your thoughts on Law of Ordeal?
So I would. This needs to be played at the beginning of a scene. I get that this says when opposed by a list of threats. I'm of the opinion that this is more like a good versus evil kind of thing, but it is law of ordeal, and ordeal is apt for what this is going to put the Storm Knight through, because this is all attacks against this Storm Knight. By now, it lists three named sources: Cyber Priests, Cyber Nuns, and Inquisitors. I like the idea of broadening it up to church forces, because they represent the church. And by definition, if they represent the church or they are church forces, which Cardigas, probably not church forces. They're just, you know, the slave labor with faith chip, whatever, blah. But Cygoyle, yeah, that's working for the church. They're the eyes and ears of the church, right? So I would open this up for that. But it has to go at the beginning of the scene, and you have to understand that player has to understand I'm going through the whole scene. That's why I'm earning three, because that, as Jay said, that's strong. That's a lot. I mean, that's full refresh for an act, and that's a lot. So yeah, you got to go through it. So, you know, I'm halfway through the combat that's at the end of the scene, and then I drop this down. No, that doesn't work. At the beginning of the scene, when you don't know what you're facing, you don't know how many fights you may or may not have in that scene. Because if you're in the investigation scene and you're a smart player and you're like, oh, I don't think I'm going to fight anybody in this scene. Let me play this. Okay. I mean, maybe. But that's when it says opposed by, and if you're not opposed by. So, yeah. I'd put, as you said, make it an ordeal. They can't just coast through it and just rake in three possibilities and not get pulled through a knothole, because absolutely they need to be the focus of the church's ire for that scene.
So I would do it as the Cyber Priest, Cyber Nun, or Inquisitor, would just mean Miracle Worker. So I wouldn't open it up myself. I wouldn't open up everything, because that's the thing that these three have in common. So bishops, yes. The Cyber Pope, yes. That's how I would open up that. The opposed part, I would probably myself do it at the start of some type of conflict, because a scene might not include them. I guess you could always say, hey, just keep your card or put it out on the table face up. So either one of those works, and I would read it as it, because it says that they need to be opposed by this list, period, and then attacks on the Storm Knight. It doesn't say their attacks, so I would open it up to be any attack. So then, to me, it would be the Cyber Priest, or say anything. Cyber Nung, they initiate the ordeal. You've played, you want to go through an idea. Or an ordeal. So then you know, they initiate it upon you, and just like other ordeals where you could have your so-called champion stand in for you, then the church police come in, or the Cygoyle comes in, or the host comes in. I would do it as a, you need to be opposed by a miracle worker, because they're the ones need to be tied to the church spiritually to invoke that ordeal against you. But once that ordeal is against you, then it's open season on you. You're right. Going to survive the ordeal or not.
Even that's cyber gangers. That makes sense.
That's how
I might, you know, how about this for a happy medium? Play it. It's a play immediately. When you get it, you lay it down. it doesn't trigger until someone in the Cyber Priest, Cyber Nun, or Inquisitor invokes it. And once it's in, because then it could be in, then you could play it at the beginning of an act, and it could be out there until it's appropriate for it to be out there.
Right.
Then it's on the tabletop, so you know it's out there, and don't forget about it. And then when your Cyber Nun, your Inquisitor, or your Cyber Priest shows up, they invoke the Law of Ordeal, and now it's game on. I think that's okay. I could be swayed to that whole, these guys only because they got faith and they can invoke an ordeal.
And
that's
then
cool.
It's completely worth the three possibilities.
And then it's, then it is, because then you got to throw some, street beaters and some Cardigas and all the rest of them at them, because, it's an ordeal.
That's how I read it. That's how I would do it. I like the card. It makes perfect sense. And however you would tailor the effect in your own game, I think it's still worth it. So, if you want to have it more stricter, if you want to loosen it up for your game, that's fine. I think it's a very good risk reward type thing. So let's move on to 14, Law of Stagnation. Play immediately when drawn. Idea cards cannot be played for the rest of the act, and all science tests are disfavored. So, Jay, what are your thoughts on Law of Stagnation?
I like this one. It's nice and flavorful. Obviously, it's not a good card for the players, so they're not going to like it. It's funny, though, because like you'll see what groups rely on those idea cards as crutches, right? Like, because there are some people that just don't think very far. And it's like, okay, well, what are we supposed to do? Idea card. And they won't be able to do that. So they should pray instead.
Mark, your thoughts on Law of Stagnation?
I like it from the standpoint that it's a good card. It's a good Cyber Papacy card. I don't like it from the standpoint that there's no reward for this. It's just bad stuff happens to you. And, it's a game. And there's no balance to me in this card. It's just, okay, we're just jacking you up. No ideas, and all your science stuff is disfavored for the rest of the act. And you can't get rid of it. You've got the other one that's, if you hit a glory, the card goes away. This one, it's just there, and you're screwed. And you don't get anything for it. Okay, I'm getting, in some of the other cards, I'm getting a raw deal, but at least I got a possibility or two. Here, I'm just getting the raw deal. Mm-hmm. So
you're not getting a raw deal. We're all getting a raw deal.
Well, there's misery loves company with this card.
I agree with both of you on this. The one thing I also would say, that depending on how your table runs and plays, this could be worse or better. The idea card itself has two different effects, and the second effect is going to be removed from anybody, which is the approved action on the drama deck can be changed to any through idea. So this card is going to completely eliminate that part of the idea card. The other part of the idea card, which Jay alluded to, was when you gain a clue or insight indicating the next course of action your hero should take. There is when it's going to be, are you running a one of the pre-published or the published adventures? Are you making up your own adventure? How do you play as a group? Because there are some groups out there that they will make the person, succeed in a find or something that gives them the clue that they need to continue on. If they don't make that find and they don't think about it, then the idea card becomes very important as a, hey, Game Master, we can't go further, so I'm playing the card that allows us to go further. I can't guarantee that every single adventure written for Torg Eternity, but I can say that most of the ones that I've seen, played, and definitely have written, they always have whatever that base clue is found, and then the additional information that helps them understand more of it. So the clue that is going to get them to the next part of the adventure is given, and any additional information is from your fine total. That's going to, this law of stagnation is going to affect that a little bit less than the ones who don't give that base information. So that's something to think about. And I'm not saying wrong or right. My views are different whether you're playing an open sandbox that you can stop a campaign plot and just switch to another plot, then I don't see it as bad. But if it's a, we're going through Blood on the Blasted Lands and we can't get further, so we have to stop this game, that's a different story. So that's something that I would keep in mind for Law of Stagnation. But yeah, it lasts an entire act. No idea card, so you can't change that card or the drama card to any. All science tests are disfavored, which is bad, but not as bad as if it was, say, all scholar and science, or find, or
not,
you know,
evidence,
and you know, certain things like that, with no reward. There's absolutely no reward for this card. So
let's move if on. I may,
yes,
if I may. So on the whole stops a campaign thing dead. Yeah, you write it so that you get you can get a piece, but sometimes folks, like you said, they're find DN10 or you don't get the bit. Well, if you didn't get the key linchpin, because the GM should know what the key linchpin mm-hmm. is to move to the next thing. And I agree with you that there's this is the linchpin and everything else is extra and you get some flavor and stuff. But if you've done it, if you've set it up in a way that, like, here's, you got to find it, so that, you know, the player's efforts are rewarded, then, and they didn't, because they didn't open the secret door or they didn't find the book that had the MacGuffin hidden in it, then put it somewhere else.
Right.
I mean, don't get stuck in the way the mod or the mission or the adventure is written that says that it's here and it's only here, and if they don't find it here, they don't get it. And you're like, well, yeah, if they don't get it, then they're just, it's over. This mission's over, because they're not going to go on to Act 4, 5, and 6. They don't know how to get there. Put it somewhere else. Create a computer system they can hack. The players are usually really good at figuring out other ways. You don't necessarily have to figure it out. They might say, well, what's over here? And now they're going through the mail. Okay, well, put an envelope over there that's got the key piece of information in it that got overlooked, or a notepad that they have to, you know how they always do in the movies where you take the pencil and you see the last note that was written on above it, the imprint. Come up with some other way to do it, but advance the plot that way. I just don't like the idea that if they don't find it where it's written in the mission, then they don't find it at all. That just, I reject that idea. Put it where you want it. It's your Cosmverse.
Yeah, and I would agree with that, especially with Torg Eternity. I'm just saying some people won't think of that, especially...
No, you're right. You know, you are.
And to you know, be like, where I see both ways is because I also game master a very old school type setting, which is a completely open sandbox. So if my group got to a pyramid that has a magic door and they fail to read the magic to open the door, well, they have 100 other plot lines that they can go on until they bring somebody back. The campaign doesn't stop. Either way, you don't want this card to stop your campaign, so you use Mark's thing of moving the clue, or you just have the base clue. You just don't want this card to stop the game.
Yeah, because your players don't know where it's written that it's supposed to be.
Right.
If they do, they're reading the book, okay, and they shouldn't be. Right? But they don't know where it is or it isn't for real. And if, when they find it where you tell them they found it, that's where they believe that it was.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not roped into what's on the printed page. The players don't know what's on the printed page.
Right. So, okay, moving on to 16, Stigmata.
Play this 15.
15.
Or did we? Oh, well, sanctioned. Okay, I somehow flipped it.
Yeah, it's like, whoa, wait a minute.
Oh, 15, or the card number 15. Sorry, I just started flipping cards, I guess.
Law of 15.
Law of Sanction. Play on a character with hacked cyberware. And specifically, in parentheses, it says not occult tech, which lore-wise makes sense. That character takes 10 plus 1 BD damage that ignores armor and cannot be soaked, or 10 plus 2 BD damage if they have more than 3 cyberware installs. If played on a hero, he gains 2 possibilities after taking damage. So, Jay, what are your thoughts on Law of Sanction?
This one's pretty decent. I like the Law of Sanction just in general, like for the explanation why the cyberware and the cyberpapacy doesn't freak people out and everything. But if you're only ever fighting church police and like cyber priests and things like that, then it might not seem to have that much effect. But there is a whole section of the cyberpapacy and the sprawls where you're going to be going up against cyber gangers a lot. Like, they're pretty common in the setting, and they all have hacked cyberware. Like, they're not going to church, you know. They're what are they called now? Cyberjackers. Just ripping out cyberware, installing them on people, not clean hacks like the Delphi Council uses. So this will work on any of them. So that's really handy. And to be honest, 10, it's not the end of the world. For 2 possibilities can be pretty good, even for players, especially if you have someone on standby with healing. Now, some might call that kind of cheesy, but when some of the cards could just screw your whole group over with no bonus, sometimes you'll take that.
So, Mark, your thoughts on Law of Sanction?
So I completely understand why you would say that lore-wise this card makes sense to be on cyberware and not on occult tech. The Law of Sanction, that the cyberware is produced by God so that his faithful can be helped, right? And so the Godnet and then Jean Malru and then the Cosm sanction that install in you, and so they allow you to function. Even when you hack that cyberware, part of the hack, the reason you have to do it is that you have to keep that sanctioning intact, but disable the ability for the Godnet to know that you've done that, right? And so you just kind of appear as if you're one of the faithful when you're not really, and that's, you know, so that's the nuance of needing the mechanic who, or the doctor who does that install does it properly, right? All of that said, I really think that it should affect occult tech too, but for a different reason, because in the law, with the Law of Sanction, it's seeing the cyberware as the blessed piece, whereas the occult tech it sees as the infernal piece, and so it's rejecting or pushing back against the demonic stuff, and that's why the occult tech's taking damage versus the sanctioned stuff. So I like it. I love the fact that it cannot be soaked. Mm-hmm. If you want your possibilities, you got to take the damage, right? And so for some of the beefy guys, then, and it ignores armor, right? Can't be soaked. You could really get jacked up by this. I like the card for that reason, and I think that there ought to be more cyberware oriented cards, because cyberware is so steeped inside the cyber papacy that's like the thing. And we don't have, you know, cyberpsychosis doesn't make as much of a play as it used to, and cyberware is just like, okay, that's what we get over here, and then we move out into other realms from there. And I just wish it had a little bit more. Good card though.
Yeah, I like the card. I could completely see this including occult tech and be called something like Rebuke Unholiness or something. So if it's not Sanctum and it's occult tech. But I like the...
What about Cadandrin?
Or yeah. You know, wouldn't be it either. So on this one, I think the risk-reward is very, very nice. You get 2 possibilities, pretty good, but you... Depending on how those BDs explode, you could take minimum, you could take a shock, or even enough. Well, you would need a pretty high toughness to take nothing, but you could take a couple of shock, or you could take some serious wounds, depending on how those bonus dice explode. And again, it's dependent on how much cyberware you have. So that, I think, is also pretty flavorful. Now we can move on to 16, Stigmata. play this card on a character who can invoke miracles. They may choose to receive an inexplicable wound, which may not be soaked, to make invoking their favored, miracles favored for the rest of the scene. So, Jay, what are your thoughts on Stigmata?
I would abridge this slightly, edit it so that it only lasts as long as the wound exists. Mm-hmm. Like, if you then I would lose it. Again, this is another one where, hey, do we have a miracle worker? No? Okay. Because are you really going to play this on an enemy? Because if it's like a cyber priest or someone with no wounds, they are obviously not going to take a wound to make themselves favored. And if it is an enemy that has a lot of wounds, do you really want them to become favored? So I like the theme of this. I think it's good. But again, it runs into that whole no, like having to have someone who casts miracles. This is why when I did my cards originally, the first pass, I used to make like a little banner on the bottom of them to say which of the world laws it was. So a lot of them were like Law of Magic had a base thing where any that would use the Law of Magic in Isle would say, if you have no spellcasters, you can draw a new one. Right. So I kind of feel like almost all of these should have something like that as just baked in.
Or an alternate effect.
But there is, of course, the fact that as the game master, you can always just choose to take this out of the deck if there's no one in your group.
So, Mark, your thoughts on Stigmata?
As the game master, you could also choose to just say, oh, no miracles, get another one. Could do that too. So on any of these cards, you know, if you're like, this is no value to my player, and I don't want to hamstring them at the beginning of the act. So, yep, just draw another card. You could do that. That said, this is a really good card. I love Jay's idea of as it only the favored only lasts as long as the wound does. That's for up to a scene. That's a great idea. I think that's just fantastic because then you the whole point of the inexplicable wound, which cannot be soaked or healed, I would think, you know, or just say as long, or put in the wording that says as long as the wound persists, the favorite persists for a scene. Other than that, I mean, it's limited use, but if you happen to be in that limited usage, it's really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think I might have probably recently read this incorrectly. We are doing a day one adventure in the Cyber Papacy. And the person who became a Cyber Priest Storm Knight played this, or somebody else played it on them. And since it lasted for the remainder of the scene, I didn't let him heal for the remainder of the scene. Because that also makes sense lore-wise that you have to have the stigmata showing on you. And if you get rid of the stigmata, then...
Or hide it,
you know, then it's not doing what it should be doing. So that, I think, all three of us would agree would be a nice tweak to this card. You can play it as is. You can add the tweak if you wish to. So let's move on to 17, Sinister Aid. Play on a character who can cast spells for the rest of the scene. Any failure to cast a spell inflicts backlash as a mishap, but any successfully cast spell at standard success becomes good, and good becomes outstanding. So, Jay, what are your thoughts on Sinister Aid?
So, outside of the standard, if you don't have a spellcaster, you're stuck with this, and the knowledge that the GM can remove it from the deck or just tell someone to redraw. I actually think this is a really good one. I like the gamble. It makes So failing is much worse, but succeeding is much better. I think that really fits it very well, and I am fairly certain this has been used a bunch in my group. Now, like, I talk about all this stuff, but when my group was running through the Cyber Papacy, we had a spellcaster, a miracle worker, and a psionicist, so we were covered for, like, and people with cyberware. So we were covered for all of these, but yeah, it is still an issue that could come up for people, though.
Mark, your thoughts on Sinister Aid?
Yeah, all of Jay's caveats. I co-sign on that. Backlash as a mishap. We summon in demons every time we fail a spell now. Maybe.
Only if that other Cosm card's in play.
Could be. that could be a bad combination. It's a nice gamble, especially if you've got your spellcaster set up to just be, you know, uber high level there. Excuse me, goodness. So we're saying there is no standard of success while this card is in effect.
Mm-hmm.
You have a good or an outstanding. Done. Mm-hmm. That's really good. I mean, that's like unbalancingly good if you play this at the right time. So, yeah, be smart. I don't see a downside to this card.
Yeah, I would say even having the backlash, any failure, the backlash is considered like a mishap backlash. Is well worth the always getting a good and outstanding when you succeed. So,
especially if any of those other ones with enhanced backlashes,
right?
Are in play.
So, I think it's a pretty cool card. Again, the caveat being you need a spellcaster, but if you have multiple spellcasters, like I have two spellcasters, they would probably argue over who needs this card more, who could use it. because it's play on a character, not affects every character. So let's move on to 18. Magical
Actually, that reminds me of one thing. Uh-huh. It is play on a character who could cast spells. So if you're going up against like a warlock or a member of the Maleficum, I can't remember what they're called now.
Sacalum.
No,
that's Arorsh.
But if you're going up against any kind of spellcaster and you have an opponent fails, you can basically play this and cause them to backlash, like automatically, right?
That's kind of an edge case, but
it's a good very one. Edge. Yeah,
but hey, you can.
It
use
exists.
It. Yeah, no, it's an edge case that exists.
So, okay, Magical Burnout number 18. Play at the start of the scene, so this is something that you would choose to because it's not immediate, but it needs to be at the start of the scene. For the rest of the scene, casting spells gain a... And here's where I think we need to change the term. It says, gains a malfunction range of 1 through 2. If a malfunction is rolled, the character cannot cast spells. So before I continue... I am almost certain that this should be mishap because malfunctions are only for firearms. So that's
gizmos.
So I would say, yeah, shooting things that cannot work, technology or things,
mechanical stuff.
Yes. So let's correct this, saying for the rest of the scene, casting spells because spells don't have a malfunction. So. Gain a malfunction range of 1 through 2 if a malfunction, or have a mishap range of 1 to 2. If a mishap is rolled, the character cannot cast spells with that skill for the rest of the combat. Storm Knight spellcasters gain 1 possibility. So, Jay, your thoughts on Magical Burnout?
I don't know if I really have any big thoughts. I know this picture. I've had this card like up in the side of the screen through so many scenes of play, and I don't think it's ever actually done anything. So the amount of impact is pretty low. It does say you get the possibility, regardless if it triggers or not. The question is, when do you get the possibility? Do you get at the start of the scene when it's played, or do you get at the end of the scene when it goes away? I would presume you get it at the start of the scene when you play it, but it's because it's not like per time it mm-hmm. screws you over. It's just one and done. And yeah, it's sure it doubles your mishap chance, but it's still not the end of the world. Yeah, this one's okay. Again, assuming you have any spellcasters. But again, also, it affects any spellcasters. So if you're going up against bad spellcasters, including demons,
mm-hmm.
All the demons are spellcasters. So it would affect them as well. So this one's okay because it's not... like, it actually has a little bit more use outside of just yourself.
Mark, your thoughts on Magical Burnout?
I think that the reward is not in line with the risk, because this does say play at the start of the scene, so you are required to play this at the beginning. So every single spell you're going to cast now has a 10% chance of failing instead of just a 5% chance. And is a mishap, can you can't favor out of a 1, but with this card in play, can you favor out of a 2? I think you may have to make that known beforehand, because the whole point of this card is that your ones now become ones and twos. And so I can absolutely see how the GM can say, with this card in play, you cannot favor out of a 2 now. Right? But I can also see how you could say, well, it's not a 1, so a 2 you could favor out of a 2. That's your mileage may vary, table variation, however you want to say it. It turns off that skill for the rest of the combat. While this is still in effect for the scene, I think that's a misnomer, and I would like to see that for the rest of maybe for the rest of the scene. If you jacked it up to 2 possibilities, purely because if this is in play for the scene and it's not just combat, you can cast spells that do stuff out of combat, right? And if you have this malfunction range. Mishap range pop up and turn off that kind of spell, if you're not in combat, then it just turns right back on again. There's no effect from that perspective. So I don't know. I would absolutely give the possibility the moment that this card is played, because it says Stormlight spellcasters gain 1 possibility. So you play it at the beginning, you get an extra possibility, and now you have a mishap range of 1 to 2 that in my opinion, while you wouldn't disconnect on a 2, I would absolutely not let you favor out of the 2 with this card in play, just because that to me is the flavor of what this card is designed to do.
So yeah, Magical Burnout is interesting. A mishap range of 1 through 2. I would probably do it a little bit differently. The mishap, I possibly would allow favored out, but if somebody was trying to not fail the spell and added a possibility or something, it's still the initial roll of a 1 to 2 that causes a mishap. So you can actually mishap and succeed. So that's probably where I would do it. It does last a very long time. Everybody gets a possibility. The chances are going to depend on how many tests you roll. So it could be very good. Hey, every Storm Knight gets a possibility and nobody gets any badness, or you could have it occurring a lot with lots of tests being rolled and lots of bad dice rolling. I think this could be one that people would play and go, oh yeah, I don't really notice that it did anything besides give us a possibility, where other groups would go, man, that's the worst card ever. We just kept failing because of the dice gods are frowning upon us. Magical Burnout. Let's move on to number 19, Bug Out. Play on any character in the God Net who is operating a cyber deck. They may immediately bug out of the Godnet without any threat or pursuit or threat of pursuit or injury. If this card is not played this act, all Storm Knights gain one possibility at the start of the next act. And just to clarify what the bug out is, normally you have to succeed in step, at least a step, to get out of the God Net. If you don't, some bad things can happen, and things within the God Net could come out. So the effect is not having any of those negative things about suddenly leaving the God Net affect you. So, Jay, what are your thoughts on bug out?
I mean, it'll really depend on how much the God Net is in use in your game. In theory, the God Net should be used a lot if you're in the Cyber Papacy. I'm kind of... It's a weird situation. I almost think there should be more cards that deal with the God Net. I've thought about doing just an entire pack of God Net specific cards, so then that way you just use them then. But on the other hand, when you do go into the God Net, it's usually like one or two people doing most of the stuff. So how likely is it that the right person, I mean, you could play this on anybody, right? But it's like, are we going to need it? Are we going to be in the God Net at all? How useful is it? But luckily, unlike a lot of other cards, this has a provision for that. If you don't use it, you get possibilities next game. You just have to remember. But I'm sure the players will remind you. So that's probably not a problem. Maybe not so good for Torganized Play game, where it may not be the same people again. But overall, I like this. But it does mean that if you're not going to be going into the God Net and you get this card, sure, you're going to get that extra possibility next game. But this is just going to sort of sit in your hand and do nothing the whole time. So it's flavorful, but kind of a drag. But at least you get something out of it if you don't use it. So I guess that all kind of averages out to okay.
So, Mark, your thoughts on bug out?
As Jay pointed out, it's like one of the only God Net flavored cards in the Cyber Papacy, which is all about the God Net. I mean, it's the net running cosm for the game, and this is what we got. So that makes it a really... this card has to come up, has to be in the hand of the person who is in the God Net, and that person has to need to get out of the God Net in a hurry, and it works, right? So you play on, but you play it on any character in the God Net who is operating a cyber deck. So I guess if I'm holding it and I'm not in the God Net, I can play it on whoever is. So that kind of, as I'm rereading it, that doesn't really matter. So I can play it on the person who's in the God Net. Mm-hmm. I don't have to be there. But is this just a get on that one character out? What if there's, you know, four or five people, if the whole team is running around in the God Net and this just gets one of us out? If we're all ride-alongs, do I bug out the decker and that takes all of us, or are we all suddenly angel bait and we're boned because we got left? And, you know, how does that work? So, I mean, there's a lot of questions about the card. If you look on page 70 of the Cyber Papacy source book, you'll find the bugging out part, and it gives you some information about the DSR and what steals and whatnot. But it's essentially Trinity and Neo trying to get out of the Matrix with Smith chasing them down. You know, and it's right before Smith blows the phone out of Trinity's hand as she jacks out, right? So how does that work in your God Net? This is a, we're not going to do any of that. You just get out. And so you don't get the possibility, but you got out of the God Net successfully. I might allow it to be, if it were played, it might be a get out of jail free card for everybody in the God Net. If it's, you know, we play it on the decker, who's, you know, if you have multiple deckers, if you want to really get, you know, maybe it's only this deck or that deck, but if it's all ride-alongs, I don't know how you do it. Your mileage, again, your mileage may vary, table variation, do it how you want. The point, I think, is that everybody gets out of the God net without having to do that DSR. Or a chase.
It's a get out of chase free. I'm going to love this card. that is interesting, though, because it does say play on any character. So you are going to have to determine what any means. Does it mean any one character, or does it mean any and all characters, or any character who wants to? Because even with it being character, you could say something like anybody, which is a one, not anybody's, but anybody who wants free breakfast, meet me tomorrow. And if you have 100 people show up, then hopefully you can pay for 100 people. It's different than if any one of you specifically, you know, one and only. So is it any and all, or is it any one character? Determine that. If it's a whole group, if your whole group's in the Godnet and you need to leave, I would definitely probably have it as the group gets to get out. Otherwise, that group in there is going to have a completely different adventure than the one who made it out. And as the nice little backup, if for some reason you get through that entire act without going through, without encountering the God net, everybody gets the possibility. Next time. Again, your mileage may vary if you don't have a next time, or you're in a like organized play, which your next time may or may not be with the same group, same game master type thing. So that's something to think about and keep in mind.
I would like to point out that the bug out rules do express that the DSR is to get to and open the node that you use to exit. Mm-hmm. So, and that's bugging out, right? So I would say that because the card is, we talked about the law of ordeal, right? And the law of sanction, this is bug out. And so if this is bug out, it's the goal of the card is to play it on a character, and that character creates the node that then everybody can use to get out. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you read it, if you play it as written, one character gets to get out of the Godnet. I'm not a fan of that, so
I'd probably do it as one, like the Nodder gets out, and any ride-alongs they have get out. But if other people came in on their own cyber deck or through a cyber witch portal, they're on their own.
So you would do it as a cyber deck people, play it on a cyber deck.
One deck, yeah. And that makes sense too.
That also gets a situation where it saves those people, but now nobody's getting the possibilities.
Uh-huh.
Whereas before, everyone's going to get the possibilities, right? Well, so there might be people who are not going to get saved, saying, "Hey, let's not be hasty. try to bug out the regular way."
And we have on the Wednesday night stream right now, we've got two deckers. So if you've got two people, and they do occasionally go in the Godnet, each using their own deck so they can use their own programs, right? So you save one decker and you leave the other guy by himself out there hanging in the wind.
Well, he better be elite.
the last thing I wanted to mention, because Jay pointed out that this is the only like Godnet specific card. That doesn't mean these other cards that we've talked about can't be used in the Godnet, but this one specific. Fair. But it is kind of ironic, because if what I remember in conversation with the previous developer designers, because I mentioned that the Cosm card seemed similar to how the original in Classic Torg, not the original drama deck, but they had add-ons in the Infiniverse, and one of the add-ons was specifically like a Godnet thing, and another add-on was specifically another. It was almost like every reality had a specific card that was really great if you were in the reality, but it made no sense as a current Destiny card. Back then, the drama card, the drama deck and the Destiny were all the drama deck. One side was Destiny, one side was drama effects, basically. That it was useless. And it was like, oh, so these Cosm cards seem to be like a bunch of those very specific ones, but only used when they were appropriate. And it was pretty much confirmed that that's kind of where some of the ideas for these Cosm cards came. So I thought that it was funny that one of them specifically was God-Net related in classic Torg. And in Torg Eternity, when they came up with these 10 and then 20 cards, it's card number 19. So even in the first 10, there was no specific God. So I just find that interesting, just as a thought process. And then, very quickly, we will do card number 20, Heightened Paranoia. Play in a populated area. The people there are on high alert. Intimidation, persuasion, and streetwise tests are hard. -4 penalty until a glory card is played in that area. A mishap when using any of the skill alerts the church police. All players gain one possibility. That is the same as, let's see if I can
six.
Find it. Card number 6 that we talked about last episode. So please go back one episode to hear our thoughts on Heightened Paranoia. And that is the conclusion for the Cyberpapacy Cosm cards. So again, we do wish and invite you to write us at torgdcd@gmail.com, where we will read your emails in a future episode. We will answer questions, we will comment on comments, etc. Thank you very much for watching and or viewing. And until next time, we hope you have fun in your own Cosmverse. Bye.